Car care in a time of COVID. All over Maine, all over the country, there are cars and trucks that haven't seen much action since March. They are sitting in garages and barns with dead batteries, perfect hiding places for mice and other critters. Even if you do drive your car for a few errands now and then, your maintenance schedule is probably a little off. And now winter's coming. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, our car gurus return to talk about automotive care during these strange times. We'll also learn about some of the newest vehicles on the market and discuss the growth in the electric car market and the infrastructure to support it. What are your questions about car buying, selling, or maintenance? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. Welcome to Maine Calling. I'm your host, Jennifer Rooks. Today, our favorite car experts, Jamie and John, return to talk about how the ongoing COVID crisis has affected car buying and car maintenance. And of course, they will answer your questions about car repairs and, you know, which EV might be right for you. We'll hear this hour from two local automotive professionals. With us right now, Jamie Page Deaton, who is executive editor for the U.S. News Best Car Rankings, and John Paul, AAA Northeast Car Doctor. We welcome your comments and questions. This show is for you. Email talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. So much to talk about, but I'm going to stick with tradition and start by asking each of you all what you've been driving lately. And for those of you who are not familiar with Jamie Page Deaton and John Paul, everybody who is in the automotive press has access to cars to drive and evaluate for a week or 2 weeks at a time. So any car lovers, perk, that's for sure. Jamie, what are you driving these days, and what has really struck you?
Well, I just finished up a week in the Acura TLX, which is all new for this year. It's a really sporty, upscale sedan, lots of fun to drive. The one that I had was white with this great red and black interior, which just really kind of upped the sportiness factor. Very good infotainment system, good all-wheel drive system, not a particularly usable back seat. It's kind of the kind of car you buy if you're, you know, the only people who are using your back seat is, you know, maybe taking a couple of coworkers to lunch. But I also just had a couple of days each in the Chevy Tahoe, the GMC Yukon, and the Cadillac Escalade, which are GM's big three big SUVs. And I've got to say, like, they really stepped up their game in terms of drivability and tech with all of these. They all were just super duper luxurious on the inside, really excellent infotainment. The Escalade had this great augmented reality navigation system. So if you have the navigation on and you're driving, if you look down in your gauge cluster, what you would see was a video of the road ahead, and projected onto it would be an arrow saying turn down this street over just exactly what you were seeing, you know, in the windshield. So it was really kind of mind-blowing tech on that. And beyond that, I've got to say, like, my kids felt super cool in the Escalade, just, you know, rolling up to a baseball practice because it is so big. And
they felt like a pop star or something. But Jamie, all these cars you've named, I suspect none of them have a price tag that most people are going to be happy with.
Absolutely not. No. And that's the thing. It seems like every car that I get in recently, I look at the sticker and I'm going, who can afford this? I mean, the average price of a new car now is north of $37,000. I mean, the Escalade was well above $100,000. The Tahoe was about $80,000, which,
My goodness.
I mean, obviously it was fully optioned out, but that made my jaw just hit the floor. Because that's certainly outside of, you know, my price range. And the Tahoe used to be the most affordable, you know, or an affordable large SUV option, especially if you needed to tow. And so, yeah, these car prices, these new car prices are really getting up there. But, you know, there are some other, you know, affordable cars still on the market, but just not if you're looking for, you know, a lot of luxury or a lot of space.
John, have you driven anything you've really enjoyed? And also, have you driven anything that's affordable?
Well, I've driven something that I've enjoyed, and it's also affordable, and that's the Subaru Outback. And I think on this program, we talk about Subaru products a lot. This happened to be the sportier version. It was the XT version. So it's this year, Subaru did away with the bigger engine, and they use still a good-sized engine. It's a 260 horsepower, but it's a turbocharged engine rather than the flat six they were using before. So it has plenty of horsepower, and it's a Subaru, so it's dependable, and it's amazingly solid off-road. It has probably the same amount of ground clearance as the Tahoe that Jamie was just talking about. I think it has a little bit over 8 inches of ground clearance. Starting price, I think, is around $26,000. I think the fully loaded XT version is up in the mid-30s, still expensive, but a little bit cheaper than the average car. And it was, when people ask me, what's a good, dependable, all-wheel drive car for New England, it's hard not to recommend a Subaru.
I always learn so much when I study up for this program, and I learned so much from both of you, Jamie and John. I drive a 2012 Prius that I hope to drive for another 10 years, so I'm not really up on my new cars, but I learned that there's an entirely new car out there called the Lucid. Jamie, tell me about it.
I mean, this is something that's, new. And it's one of those things, like, I always just have a little bit of hesitancy whenever there's something new to the market, because it's really hard to actually get it to market, particularly if you're not an established automaker. So, I mean, the Lucid's one that I wouldn't exactly hold my breath for, but it is pretty neat.
John, anything to add to that?
Yeah, they're kind of launch edition car, so it's kind of unobtainable because they're only going to be limited market. It is over 1,000 horsepower, so it is ridiculous amount of horsepower. Lucid is claiming over a 500-mile range between charges, and 0 to 60 in about 2.5 seconds. And for drag racing fans, it runs the quarter mile in about 9.5 seconds, which is fast enough where if you were an amateur racer, you would have to put a roll cage in it, wear a helmet, and have a 5-point harness in it, because it's that fast. It's kind of, it's totally just crazy car. The more normal versions will be more between 400 and 500 horsepower, which is still an insane amount of horsepower. And they're claiming, starting price with, if you include federal tax rebates and all of that, under $70,000. So like Jamie said, whether they're able to bring it to market or not, right now they're saying they're going to do it, and it's going to be, they're going to hit the coast first. So, first ones will be sold in California. Next ones will, be out on the East Coast here, probably Boston, Miami, Portland, I would think.
Okay, so yeah. It's called the Lucid Air. And Jamie, it was developed by people who used to work for Tesla, right?
Exactly, too. And I mean, I think the thing that really makes it, potentially compelling, of course, assuming they can bring it out, is that, the projected range of the base model is 406 miles. And this is an EV. So that is a big, big number, particularly for starting just under $70,000.
And EV means electric vehicle,
electric,
right?
Electric vehicle, yeah. So, I mean, and they are also including, they're including 3 years of free charging with the first ones that they sell. And so this could essentially be like a very low cost to own, aside from the huge price tag, but low cost to operate car. But the range is a big one. I mean, the power numbers are obviously, important to a certain subset of buyers, but we see, continually see range anxiety and the availability of charging infrastructure as a big reason why people have not been adopting electric vehicles. So if you get something that's semi-affordable and you can go 400 miles on it, well, that's, better than some gasoline cars. And so this could be, again, if it comes to market, it really could be a good way to get people adopting it. The other thing that I kind of like about it is it's not crazy looking. It looks like a regular sedan, which again might convince some people to go ahead and step up to it, because it's not, as kooky looking as some other electric cars can be.
Well, we're going to talk more about electric cars later in this program. But first, I want to turn to Steve Martin, who's the shop foreman at Portland Volvo and an ASE master technician. Thanks so much for calling in, Steve.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me.
We asked you to call in because you emailed us suggesting we talk about some of the issues that car owners may be seeing due to working more from home. What are you seeing in the shop that you don't usually see?
Yeah, I was inspired to write the email because it has been a bit of a theme since Corona broke out. And, you know, the results are more vehicles are coming in with mouse damage. Mice just have this attraction to wires and some of the insulation in cars, which is it's just a total shame. It's very, very frustrating when it happens, I'm sure, for my customers. And then also rusted brakes. As you know, I mean, brakes, they rust, you know, when they're not being used. And it's just what happens to metal when it's, you know, sitting outside, maybe less so for cars that are in a garage. But you can have some flat spotted tires. I've had a number of concerns with that pop up too. It just as your tires sit, you know, that spot where they're touching the ground is flat and the tire just takes on that shape if it sits long enough that way. So it's, we're seeing a couple of things like that. And yeah, I figured it would be good to speak up about it.
Well, thank you so much. What advice would you like to share with listeners who are sitting there thinking, I don't drive that often anymore, and there is something sitting in the garage right now that I haven't thought about for a while?
Yeah. Well, it's really quite simple. I mean, drive your car. You're doing your car a huge favor driving it. And, you know, some of the best maintained cars that I know have a lot of miles on them because they've just used regularly. That's what the car is designed for. And, you know, it doesn't take much if you were to take it. So you do work from home, just take it for a drive every few days. When my car sits at home, I just kind of keep track of rain specifically because my cars sit outside. But that's one of those things where if you drive it, your systems are going to be kept better in shape. The rust is going to clean off your brakes. It's just how the car works best. So yeah, it cleans your brakes when you drive. If the car is going to sit for a long time, it's very, very good for the electrical system for the battery to be on a maintainer. So if you're really going to be sitting for a long time, that keeps your battery up at a healthy voltage and keeps it from going bad. Actually, I just spoke with my parents and they had to put a battery in their car. So, and then as well with the tire thing as well, the tires will be done favors as well if they're, you know, being used more often. So
yeah.
Also, go ahead.
Go ahead.
The mice, you know, people have a number of ways of dealing with that. And, you know, it's a concern for me too. My car, like I said, it's outside and, you know, the mothballs are a trick, you know, the dryer sheets, there's things you can Google about this. Me personally, you know what, a mouse trap is, you can't go wrong. Mouse traps work really well. And also a little trick that I learned is peppermint oil. If you get a good quality peppermint oil and put that on like a cotton ball and under your hood, maybe different places around the car, it actually deters mice. So, you know, there's a couple of tricks. I mean, some people live in areas where they just have the worst luck. So, you know, it depends on where you are to some degree. But there are tricks that you can use.
I'm going to bring John Paul into this conversation. John, we've talked about mice on Maine Calling before. Anything you want to add to what Steve said?
No, mice can do literally thousands and thousands of dollars worth of damage. And you're right. It's, you know, some of these minty things, oil of spearmint, oil of peppermint work. You can go to a good hardware store and they'll have something. It almost looks like a tea bag with oil of spearmint already in it. That sometimes can help. But a lot of times it's just remove anything that can attract rodents, and it can be, you know, if you park in the garage and you keep pet food out in the garage or bird seed out in the garage, things like that, try to block all the entrance areas. I'm the same way. I leave my cars outside, so I'm a little bit subject to, you know, what can happen. And all the tips were great. Something like a battery maintainer, like a battery tender, is a good way to make sure the battery stays fully charged at AAA. We mm-hmm. do an awful lot of jump starts for people who leave their cars sitting for weeks at a time. Flat spotted tires, sure. So I always like to tell people, take your car out once a week. Go for a good 30-minute drive. Exercise the car. And if it is going to sit for a long period of time, get some fuel stabilizer, the stuff that you would put in your lawnmower in the wintertime and your snowblower in the summertime. Put that in the car to keep the gas from going bad. And I just stumbled across a product last week, and it's a car cover, but it's made from a company called Cover Seal, and it actually goes all the way to the ground and has like a sand band around the bottom of it, so it puts some weight down on it to hold the car cover down. It's breathable, but it seals the outside out. And the guy invented it because he has a very expensive import car, and it had $28,000 worth of rodent damage done to it. So he said, I'm going to build myself a car cover, and he's in this car cover business. So that's one thing you can do, and I guess it does a pretty good job of keeping mice and rats and other rodents out of your car.
Yeah, because I was about to say, even if you try to close off every hole in your garage, mice can really get anywhere. Steve, we've got you on the air. You've been in a business for a long time, in the business with winter fast approaching. What's your advice that you repeat over and over to people?
Well, first of all, you can't go wrong. I highly recommend getting your car checked over for winter. And it's actually fairly common, and a shop would go in and verify your battery's in good health. We do have instruments that can check a battery and actually tell us the integrity of the inside of that battery. So that's one of those things. Coolant is the liquid that keeps your engine cool, and its properties are thus that it will not freeze below freezing. So it's supposed to stay liquid. One of the tests we can run on that is to verify that it's actually maintained its integrity as well, so it's going to not become frozen and cause some damage to your engine. So coolant, we'll check the integrity of the coolant, brakes and belts, of course. But tires are one of the chief things that we look at. If a customer is not using winter tires, we'll definitely let them know if those tires are worn, say, more than half, not to expect, you know, excellent performance from those tires. Mm-hmm. So, and I also can't recommend snow tires highly enough. They particularly, my favorite brands are Nordman Nordman and Nokian. They are just fantastic tires. They stay quiet. They last a long time, and it's definitely worth the investment. I remember for quite some time, I was not a snow tire guy. And I tell you, when I finally, you know, I spent the money and got my first set of snow tires, I'll tell you, I was blown away. It's a marked difference. And
Steve, you know, I hear John Paul says the same thing time again. John, I can tell that you're smiling through the my earphones here. I have a tweet that will wrap up what you all have said. We are a pest control small business in Maine, and we have had a 200% increase in, quote, cars with mice. Overall pest control in general has gone up due to, I think, people being at home and noticing pest issues more. So hear, hear. And Steve, thank you so much for calling in and joining the conversation today. Steve Martin, shop foreman at Portland Volvo and an ASE master technician. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Androscoggin Home Healthcare and Hospice, with expanded services in Augusta, including pediatric care and telehealth. More at androscoggin.org. Bangor Savings Bank, celebrating all the ways people all over Maine are making life a little better. Bangor.com/spreadkindness. And Modern Pest Services, now featuring the Anti-CMEX Smart Pest Control System for your home. Learn more at modernpest.com.
Hi, this is David Greene. While most of you are still sleeping, I am spending my overnights right here at NPR getting ready to host Morning Edition. Usually, I'm touching base with reporters and editors around the world, writing scripts or begging for more coffee. What makes all of that possible? Well, it could be your car. That's right, the car you're driving could help pay for the next great story you hear on Morning Edition. Turn your car into the programs you love.
And you can do that by visiting mainpublic.org and clicking on support. This afternoon at 2 o'clock, Maine Public Radio will offer live coverage of a special Maine CDC briefing on the coronavirus that will include Governor Janet Mills, who will discuss the recent increase in COVID-19 cases here in Maine. Immediately following the Maine CDC briefing, we'll rebroadcast our Your Vote 2020 First District Congressional Debate between Democratic incumbent Shelley Pingree and Republican challenger Jay Allen. That's this afternoon at 2, a special Maine CDC briefing that includes Governor Mills, and then immediately following that, the Your Vote 2020 First District Congressional Debate.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, answers to your car, truck, SUV, EV, and more questions. Our guest, Jamie Page Deaton, who is executive editor for the U.S. News Best Car Rankings, and John Paul, AAA Northeast Car Doctor. We invite you to be part of the conversation. You can email talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. This is a no judgment zone. No question is too dumb for us. On the line with us now, Tony Jambro, who is owner of Paris Auto Barn, which is a full-service, eco-friendly garage. Tony, for a lot of folks, making the switch to an electric vehicle is intimidating. What advice would you give to someone who's listening, who's thinking about going to an EV?
Hi, Jennifer. Yes. So one of the most common things that we tell customers here at Paris Auto Barn is we encourage people not to buy more range in their electric vehicle than they really need. A lot of people have a mindset where they really need a, 300, 400, 500 mile range car in order for it to be practical for their everyday use. But if you're driving only, maybe 50 miles a day for your commute and you only rarely go on longer trips, then you don't really need a 300 mile range car unless you can truly afford it.
Interesting. How about people who are worried that, gosh, I'm in Maine, I don't have the same kind of charging infrastructure that some of the big cities with lots of people have?
I would remind everyone that the majority of the time, I would say, well over 90% of the time, you're going to be charging at home. So if you leave your house every day with a full charge, you can imagine that you can get most places that you need to get in the state of Maine without any issue, especially with the ever-increasing number of public chargers available in the state of Maine.
All right. You are selling used EVs and hybrids at your shop. Is there a big market for used electric vehicles?
Oh, absolutely. We sell a ton of cars here, starting probably around $7,500 or so, going up to maybe $30,000 or so as far as electric vehicles go. I would say the interest is definitely there. And the reason why we're getting so many people coming to us out here in South Paris is it seems like there aren't many other dealers out there that are educating themselves and are able to answer the questions that people have about electric vehicles. So people are coming here because they know that, we've been driving electric vehicles ourselves for many years, and we have a wide range of different models, not specific to any particular manufacturer. I think that we would see a lot more electric vehicle sales in the state of Maine if dealers started to educate themselves and were willing to answer these questions.
What would you recommend to someone who is interested in an electric vehicle, but boy, doesn't have the budget for some of these high price tags we're hearing?
Like I said, we're selling cars starting around $7,500 or so. Those are usually Nissan Leafs. Range on them is typically somewhere around 60 to 100 miles. And I know a lot of people would react negatively to those numbers. But again, I would remind people that if you have a very short commute, these cars are still very practical. Two employees here actually drive Nissan Leafs to the shop. We all drive electric cars for that matter. But they only live, you know, 10 to 15 miles away, and they're driving cars that have 50, 60 mile ranges, and it works perfectly fine for them. So there's not really any need to go out and buy a, you know, $40,000-$50,000 electric car unless you need it to be your only means of transportation and you go on very long trips all the time.
I have an email that I'm going to put to you before we let you go, Tony. This is an email from Don. How does one get heat from an electric car during cold Maine winters without draining the battery? Does this significantly shorten the range?
So, yes, it does reduce the range, but I would also mention that fuel mileage in gas cars goes down during the winter as well. It doesn't go down in gas cars to the amount that it does in electrics, but I would say, in my experience, up to 25-30% reduction in range in the winter in worst-case scenario. You know, very cold day, snow, heat crank, that type of thing. But the other thing to keep in mind is that some of the newer electric vehicles out there, they're getting more efficient with the heaters and air conditioning. So if you're reading online or talking to people and they're talking about the first generation of Nissan Leafs, it's completely different than what is on the market nowadays. Most of them are coming out with heat pump style heaters in them. Which is basically the same technology that people are familiar with in their homes nowadays, you know, the heat pumps heating your house. And that's way more efficient, and that helps to increase the range during winter time.
Well, Tony, I so appreciate you calling in. That's Tony Jambro, the owner of Paris Auto Barn, which is a full-service, eco-friendly garage. I want to follow up on Tony's thoughts about electric cars, Jamie. California is really leading this here in the U.S., correct? I mean, the reason, if somebody doesn't pay close attention to the automotive industry, they may not realize the sea change that's coming, right?
Absolutely. And I mean, California definitely leads when it comes to EV sales. And that's in large part because the state government has really pushed for that. You know, we, you know, in Boston and that area, you know, there's pretty bad traffic, but it's nothing like California traffic. And one of the ways that California incentivized the purchasing of EVs was by allowing EV drivers to get in the HOV lanes and giving them stickers for that. So that was really the first step. But since then, you know, California really has led the way with infrastructure, with tax breaks. And though EVs are still very, very small in terms of sales when compared to gasoline-powered cars, you know, even in California, California makes up such a large percentage of EV sales nationwide because California also has very strict air pollution laws and very strict fuel economy standards that automakers have to meet. Because if you can't sell cars in California, you might as well not sell cars in the United States at all. And on top of that, too, you know, what we're starting to see a little bit of with these terrible wildfires that California has been enduring and the fact that the wildfire season in California now is extending, you know, so it's 2 months longer now on average than it used to be. Californians themselves are really starting to realize, wait a second, we have to do something about, you know, global climate change. We need to do something to take care of our environment. And that has spurred a lot of people to adopt an EV because they're seeing the environmental effects of our dependence on, you know, fossil fuels in a way that, you know, those of us on the East Coast really don't see in such a visceral way. So California really is, you know, it's a testing ground for a lot of new technologies in the automotive industry, but particularly different propulsion systems. And, you know, that means electric cars, hydrogen cars, you know, liquefied natural gas cars as well.
John, anything to add to that?
No, and I've said this before, I think in, you know, the next 20 or 25 years, gasoline cars may be as rare as a car with a manual transmission is today. You know, if you kind of talk to all of your friends, hardly any of them drive a car with a manual transmission. And I think in maybe 25 years or so, we're going to see the same thing about internal combustion cars. They may not be electric. They may be hydrogen. They may be compressed natural gas. Hydrogen right now looks like it's a little bit of a resurgence, even as gasoline prices are dropping around the country. So, you know, that's certainly part of it. And the other thing, you know, the kind of dark side of electric cars is the electricity has to get made from somewhere. And now we're looking at using sort of geothermal rather than other sources. Sure, wind power, solar are ways to do it, but most of the electricity made in the United States is made with compressed natural gas, gas-fired generation. But there is still wind, solar, and now maybe geothermal. Nuclear power plants, a lot of them are getting shut down. And, of course, I think we're down to about 28% of our electricity is made with coal, and coal's, you know, dirty enough where you don't want to continue that. So as we're looking at electrics, we're also looking at ways to make the electricity and make it in a cleaner way.
We're going to go to Jack, who's calling from Wallagrass. Hi, Jack. Go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. I have a 2018 F-150 that has an automatic shutoff on the gas or a fuel when you come to a stoplight, and then your foot's on the brake and the wheels are lying straight and all, and the air conditioner doesn't call on anything. And when you take your foot off the brake, it starts again. And in a stop-and-go situation, I'm wondering what the effect of that kind of driving has on a starter motor.
Exactly what you think it does. It's going to shorten the life. We don't know how much yet because we haven't been able to, you know, really look at it completely. But certainly that repeated starting, and depending on how the car starts. Some cars use a beltless style system. Some use a belt. It looks like a big giant alternator under the hood, but that's the thing that actually starts the car. Some are actually using the starter. Those style vehicles, a lot of them will use a different style battery. It will use some instead of a flooded lead acid battery. So what we're traditionally used to, will use a glass mat battery or an AGM battery. We're finding that although those batteries are superior in a lot of ways, shorter battery life, shorter starter life on the style that use a conventional starter. And personally, I don't see a huge fuel savings. Now, when you look at the amount of vehicles that are on the road, and if you save even a teeny bit of fuel on every single vehicle and lower vehicle emissions a teeny tiny bit on every single vehicle, you know, with 250 million vehicles in the United States, it's going to obviously make some difference. But I think out of my wallet, I don't see a lot of savings. I don't drive as much as I used to because of COVID, but I used to drive minimally 500 miles a week, and I would try to, if I had a car that had automatic fuel shut off, I'd try to do one tank of gas with the system, let it do its thing normally, and one tank of gas where it disabled the system. Your car has a button up, your truck has a button up on the dash where you can shut it off. And, you know, when I look at either the onboard fuel management system or fill up and do the basic math, I don't see a lot of difference, if any at all.
All right, Jack, thanks so much for your question. Going to go to a question here from Lizzie. I'm getting ready to head south to the Florida Keys on Friday and would like to know how to prepare my 2018 Toyota Prius. I guess, John, back to you. What would you recommend?
Now, it's a 2018, so it's a couple years old. So certainly the normal preventative maintenance that you should have done at this kind of mileage, I would look at tires specifically. At 2 years old, there could be 24,000 miles, there could be 50,000 miles, depending on how you drive. But you would think a 2018 car, there's not a whole lot to do. So I would check the vital fluids, the oil, transmission, things that you can check, make sure they're all full, make sure the oil has been serviced recently. Air pressure is very important with the tires. If the tires are in good shape, open up the driver's side door, look at the placard on the side of the door that tells you how much air to put in the tires. If you're carrying a lot of weight, and the Prius is kind of a unique car because it's where it's a hatchback, you can jam a lot of extra stuff in there. If you are carrying a lot of weight down to the keys, you know, maybe bring the tire pressure up somewhere near the maximum inflation level. That's something we wouldn't recommend with a car that has not a lot of extra weight in it. But as you add a little bit of weight, you can add a little bit of air to the tires. Short of that, make sure you have a good set of windshield wiper blades on the car and carry an emergency kit just in case. Flares or reflective triangles, a little portable air compressor, maybe one of those although Priuses are a little bit different, they still can, if you leave your lights on long enough, you can kill the 12-volt battery, and the car can need a jump start. So maybe even one of those portable jump start packs is not a bad idea. But as a minimum, I'd bring a portable air compressor. They plug into the cigarette lighter or connect to the battery under the hoods. So if you have a low tire, you can pump it up so you can get to a place to get the tire fixed properly. And again, some in case of emergency type things, make sure you have a spare tire, make sure the spare is in good shape, you have a jack and a lug wrench. And if your car has locking lug nuts, make sure you have the special key you need to remove the lug nuts, because without that, you're stuck.
All right. Well, we are going to take another quick break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions for our car gurus. This is Maine Calling.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Bristol Seafood, a Maine company committed to sustainable fishing practices and partnering with the Marine Stewardship Council, and University of New England, Maine's most attended private university, offering undergraduate, master's, and doctorate programs online and on campuses in coastal Biddeford, Portland, and Tangier, Morocco. The University of New England, une.edu.
The remains of Fort Pownall in Stockton Springs are added to the U.S. National Register of Historic Places on October 28, 1969. Fort Pownall, also known as Fort Point, was built on the shore of the Penobscot River in 1758 during the French and Indian War. Massachusetts Governor Thomas Pownall led the construction of a fort which he named after himself. It was one of three significant forts that the British built on the major rivers in the Northeast to prevent attacks on British settlers. The fortification was destroyed during the Revolutionary War by the actions of both the colonists and the British military to prevent its further use.
On This Day in Maine's History was created in partnership with the Maine Historical Society and made possible through the generous support of Bernstein Scher and Maine Masons, celebrating their bicentennial in Maine. Happy birthday, Maine! A special thanks to Gary from Yarmouth for his donation of a 1997 Toyota Camry. Donations to the Maine Public Car Donation Program make a big difference for your public radio station, and in most cases result in a tax deduction for you. Towing is free, and the great feeling you get from supporting the programming that you enjoy and count on is priceless. If you're wondering what to do with your car, please consider Maine Public. It's easy. Just go to mainepublic.org, click on support, and then the Maine Public Vehicle Donation Program. And thanks.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on our program, Jamie and John on the line to answer your car buying and car fixing and everything else questions. Jamie Page Deaton with U.S. News and John Paul with AAA. You can join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. If you're quick, send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Going to an email here from David. Can you tell us about emission allowances on pickup trucks and SUVs? Are they still exempt from clean air standards? When will larger electric trucks become available? And we can see a time when the pollution-spewing monstrosities are gone from our roads that have been suffering from their overloaded weight and speed demon drivers. Jamie.
Well, I'm kind of with you. I'm not a huge fan of big trucks, but I do like buying stuff, and those trucks are critical for me to be able to, you know, get stuff at my house or at the store. What's really interesting is, yes, large trucks are still exempt
from a lot of the clean air standards that we have. But large trucks are also way ahead of passenger cars when it comes to hydrogen fuel technology. In fact, we're already seeing, I was reading an article the other day about how, you know, hydrogen trucks are kind of the quiet revolution within the automotive space. Because again, like there's, with those large trucks, you have kind of set routes. So you can build your fueling stations in a more controlled way than you can with passenger cars. Because if I get in my car, who knows where I'm going to drive? But if I am Amazon or if I am Walmart, I know exactly where my trucks are going to drive. And I know exactly where I need to put those fueling stations. So, yes, we still have to deal with them, you know, for a while longer. But change is coming. And that's going to be really great news because, you know, we talk a lot about how we each have an individual responsibility, you know, to help the planet and keep our air clean, which is absolutely true. But a huge portion of carbon emissions doesn't come from individuals driving. It comes from kind of business-based driving like, you know, large trucks. So fixing that problem will go a long way in, you know, cleaning up the planet, cleaning up the roads, and, you know, hopefully keeping us all a lot safer.
Two related tweets here. The first from Zafra. What are the pros and cons of using a battery maintainer / trickle charger versus just disconnecting the battery on a car in storage? And another tweet, what is the return? Excuse me, wrong one. Here we go. Somebody else asking about the advantage of disconnecting the battery. Here we go. If you store a car for the winter, is it best to disconnect the battery? If you do disconnect, where do you store the battery? John?
Well, if you do disconnect the battery, you're best off to store it inside, not on a cement floor, because that's not good for the battery. It can actually discharge being on cement. So just putting it on top of a piece of wood can be a big help. That's one thing you can do. You don't want to leave the battery, just allow it to go dead, because what can happen when you do that is the electrolyte, the battery acid, if you will, inside the battery can actually freeze. A fully charged battery won't freeze, but one that's almost completely flat, a dead battery will freeze. It will crack the case, and the battery will be no good afterwards. So disconnecting the battery and bringing it someplace where it's a little bit warmer. You also don't want to store a battery next to anything electrical. You don't want to put it next to your furnace or anything like that. You want to just put it someplace where it's kind of out of the way but off the cement floor. Better off is, you know, from the first question, a battery maintainer. A battery maintainer is designed to be plugged in, hooked up to the battery, and to be left on all the time. It won't overcharge a battery, where a conventional battery charger or a trickle charger, even a little small one, doesn't have circuitry in it to keep the battery from overcharging. Overcharging a battery will shorten its life and potentially do some other damage. So go out, and if you are going to keep your car parked somewhere for a long period of time, go out and buy. There's different brands. One is called the battery tender. There's a smaller one and a larger one. There's another called battery minder. There's a variety of them on the market. They run anywhere from $10 to, say, $40. And it's a good way to keep your battery fully charged in good condition. You don't have to worry about it freezing. And it also, the more your battery cycles from almost dead to fully charged, shortens its life. In fact, if you leave your lights on in your car and the battery goes dead and you start up your car with a jump start and drive it around afterwards, you probably lost about 20 to 30% of your battery's life. So keeping the battery fully maintained, fully charged, is a good way to extend the life of the battery.
All right, we'll go to Victor calling from Bar Harbor. Hi, Victor. Go ahead.
Yeah, I live out in the woods, and I need two cars because I do go on a long trip from time to time, but I wouldn't use a gasoline car every day. My problem is that the insurance companies require you to buy insurance on two cars. You can only drive one at a time. It seemed to me that the insurance companies would come up with a hybrid policy for a person who owns two cars. It might encourage the use of electric cars in people in my position.
Mm. Jamie, what do you think of that idea?
I think that's actually a really interesting point because, you know, I'm kind of like him. I would like to get an electric car that I can drive every day and then have a second one, you know, for longer trips. But I would say probably, and this is just me being, you know, the insurance company's advocate. Yeah, that car is parked, but a tree can still fall on it. And so that car needs to be insured because not all of the bad things that happen to your cars happen while you're driving them.
But it could be cheaper insurance because you only need comprehensive then. You don't need a double liability policy.
Well, but you are going to drive it. So what you could do to save money is on that policy, on the policy that's on the car that's only for long trips, you know, you list your monthly mileage as being, you know, very, very low because maybe you're only driving it, you know, on average over the course of the month, you know, you're only driving it, say, 400 miles or something like that. And working with the mileage and your deductible there on your insurance company is a great way to bring your costs down, because you'd still need to have, you know, the coverage for the one time you're driving it, of course, is the time where you're going to have an accident with it, or, you know, a tree could fall on it, or your garage, you know, so anything like that could happen while it's parked. But just work with the, you know, your insurance company to discuss actually how much you're driving that car, and that can bring your costs down.
Yeah. Thanks, Victor, for taking part in the conversation today. We'll go to Bob calling from South Portland. Hi, Bob. Go ahead.
Hey, Jennifer. Thanks, everybody. Great call. I've had three Prii in my life. I'm driving a second generation Prius right now that I rebuilt the battery on. I wouldn't recommend that to everybody, but it's extended its life. Our third Prius, my partner drives, is a third generation. We affectionately call it the rocket ship. I consider it to really be the best vehicle for the price and the technology. It's a great car, and we have not put gas in it since March. And much like the others have said, she's doing short commutes to work, charges it at night, and we're very excited that Efficiency Maine has an incentive program for residential charging stations for the first 100 people to sign up to get a level 2 charger that takes our overnight charging of 6 to 8 hours down to 2 hours. And we got this level 2 charger for half the price. So lots of resources out there. We're excited at some point to hopefully go to solar. I will just say one last thing, a little bit of a guilty reality. I work with climate justice issues, and but I recently had to renovate my house, and I had to borrow a truck. And I have to say I have a little bit of a guilty lust for the $120,000 electric Hummer because I see the need for a truck, but I'm not going to be buying that one anytime soon. So,
Bob, I'm so glad you brought that up, because I know both Jamie and John have an opinion about that, and we haven't talked about it yet. So I appreciate it, and thank you for your call. Jamie, what tell those of us who are not following the car industry closely what the new Hummer is going to look like and be like.
Yeah, this is definitely not the Hummer that, you know, we all remember from, you know, the early 2000s.
Arnold Schwarzenegger,
the new Hummer,
right?
Yeah, no, but I'm pretty sure, you know, I'm pretty sure Arnold will be buying one because it's just that cool. So this is a new Hummer truck. It's from GMC. So Hummer is becoming a trim line within GM's GMC brand. It is all electric. It's got one, it's available with 1,000 horsepower and up to 11,500 foot-pounds of torque. It goes 0 to 60 in about 3 seconds. It's got a removable roof. So you've got, you know, it's basically a convertible. And then it's got available Super Cruise, which is a system that GM has really only rolled out in their Cadillac models, but it's a driver assistance feature. I mean, it's got what GM says is hands-free driving. It's not self-driving. I want to be very clear on that. But it is one of the better driver assistance features where you can take your hands off the wheel, you know, while you're driving long distances. And it's got a couple of just really neat features. It does this thing called a crab turn, where all four wheels turn so you can slide to the side, which is really crazy to see in action. But overall, it looks really, really cool. It's got kind of a retro grill, kind of retro futuristic grill, I guess, is the way to look at it, because it's got lights all the way across, but it still has the really chunky masculine styling that a lot of people like about the Hummer. And so it's one of those, you know, the caller said he had kind of a guilty feel about it. I think this is like finding calorie-free cake, right? If you can afford the price tag, which is the first edition is going to be well north of $100,000. But if you can afford it, this is you having a truck without terribly polluting everything, you know, without a lot of emissions coming out of the tailpipe, because there is no tailpipe. And it still appears to be, you know, according to GMC, very usable. It's got good towing capacity, good speed. So it'll be really interesting to see, you know, how this does. And the thing that's really interesting to me is, you know, as we talk about wanting, you know, more affordable cars, and I think particularly more affordable EVs are critical, what does GM learn from this car? And what technology can they then take down that trickles down into something that maybe doesn't cost, you know, as much as a house?
That's right. And we see those kind of changes happening really quickly. I remember the first time I rode in somebody's car with Bluetooth. I was blown away. And then, of course, the next year, even some of the least expensive cars on the market had it. And, John, I want to see if you have anything to add about the Hummer. What Jamie is describing sounds like something that's going to surface in a James Bond movie.
Well, it very well could be. And one of the things about the Hummer that I like, it actually looks like a truck as opposed to the Tesla truck, which I'm not sure what that looks like. I mean, it's cool in its own way.
It looks like a doorstop.
Yeah, it looks like a doorstop. You're right. Where this really does kind of look like a truck, and the idea that it's usable, and I think, you know, although it's, you know, they're pricing them at $100,000, you know, you can give them $100 and put your name on the list, and maybe by the time they come out, they'll be a little bit cheaper. But yeah, they're still crazy expensive. You know, not the vehicle for everybody, but if you want a truck and need a truck, and you know this has the range, it has the performance. And Super Cruise, Consumer Reports just came out and said Super Cruise works better than Tesla's Autopilot. So it looks like, you know, this is getting to the point to help you with your driving. Again, not self-driving, but I mean, it helps you along a little bit.
Okay. Jonathan, our producer, Jamie, wants to know if you think Tesla's Cybertruck will get built.
I wouldn't hold my breath, but I
okay.
mean, Tesla's proven. I think it will get built. Do I think it will get built based on, you know, the timelines that they've said so far? No.
Okay.
But I do want to add one other cool thing about the Hummer is they've built this to really appeal to a lot of off-roaders, which is why that crab maneuver I mentioned is so interesting, because if you're on a really tight trail, you can just slide, or, you know, you're parallel parking, you can just slide it in. But they also have underbody cameras on it. So you can basically see exactly what's going on, you know, with your wheels as you're off-roading it. It's almost like your floor disappears, so you can kind of see on the monitor what's happening. And again, like for if you're really serious into off-roading and picking your way down a trail, I think that would have a lot of appeal, particularly for, you know, doing off-roading in an electric truck where you're not, you know, where you're not spewing emissions everywhere and you don't have a really loud engine that could possibly disturb, you know, wildlife and other people around. That, to me, I think has, you know, makes the Hummer have a lot to offer it, presuming you can afford it.
All right. I'm going to try to squeeze in one more question under the wire. John, if you can be quick, this is from Diane. Can you talk about rust, how to prevent it? Is it possible to buy an older vehicle because your budget requires it without encountering rust? Is there anything to mitigate rust damage underneath our cars?
It really is all about preventative maintenance. Try to keep the car clean. The stuff we put on the roads today does a great job of preventing freezing roadways, but in some cases it's magnesium chloride. It's really caustic to metal surfaces. Keep your car clean as possible. You can find, if you're looking for an older car, you might find one that maybe came up from down south that has higher mileage and is pretty rust-free. But living in New England, rust is a fact of life. You live in New England and you live near the ocean, even more so. There's only so much you can do. If you can find a car that's been undercoated there's a couple of different products out now that do a good job of preventing the rust or locking it in place, at least, so it doesn't get any worse. One of them's Wax Oil. There's another one out of New Hampshire that's more of an oil-based coating. And they both work to sort of... They won't change the rust, but at least they'll hold it in place.
All right. Well, John, thank you. John Paul, Jamie Page Deaton, as always, thank you for joining us on Maine Calling. Today's engineer, Lucy Suchek. The show's produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Thanks for joining us.